Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and ways to relate better to our spiritual and physical needs by understanding reality in a broadened metaphysical sense. For more information on beginning or enhancing your own process of evolution and to listen to leading authors in the field, go to my website, CherylGlick.com. Today, we welcome Deborah Diamond, author of Life After Near Death, who will share amazing stories of transformation and healing in the extraordinary lives of people with newfound powers as the after effects of their near-death experiences. Hello, Deborah, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and I'm happy to be here.
Deborah, as listeners of Healing From Within are well aware, my guests and I seek to understand ourselves, the world, and the universe in a more expansive, open-minded fashion by recognizing both the science and spirit of who we are as spiritual beings having a physical experience. Knowledge is indeed the key to freedom and truth, and by exploring the universal laws of energy, we become more aligned to the joys of life and living with purpose and fulfillment. In today's episode of Healing From Within, we will discuss the specific cognitive and physiological near-death after-effects, including newfound musical, sometimes artistic talents, mathematical talents, enhanced hearing, elevated IQ, improved eyesight, spontaneous healing, and electrical sensitivity, all results of a near-death experience. We will also explore the circumstances and conditions that give rise to a near-death experience and our assumptions regarding the afterlife. Deborah, I always love to begin each show by asking my very special guest to think back to their childhood. Were there any interests or experiences or people who might have figured into the adult interests, work, or lifestyle that you hold dear now?
Well, Cheryl, I'm not sure that there were any people that I recall from when I was a child that, you know, may have been connected to my work now. But I can tell you that I have been psychic most of my life. I just didn't know that that's what it was. And, you know, since you read the book, you know, I was in the investment business. That was what I did professionally. And in the investment business, I just knew things. And I didn't know how I knew these things. But in the investment business, there's always a lot of reading that has to be done. And I would have stacks of reading materials, annual reports and prospectuses and whatnot dropped on my desk. So I always knew things, but we did a lot of reading in the investment business, and I would have stacks of annual reports and prospectuses dropped on my desk, and without even reading them, I would know about the companies and the products and the industries. And I never understood, you know, how that was possible, but I didn't think too much about it. Because in the investment business, you know, being psychic is not something that is ever discussed or comes up. So I did have this ability, and it wasn't until actually 2008 when I took an intuition development class in New York that this kind of emerged to be something greater.
What made you take that class? Now, as you said, you were functioning, you were aware, you knew things, but you weren't possibly knowing you were working at a psychic level or downloading information from that higher spiritual informational plane. Now, I was the same way as a kid, and I always thought it was just my good judgment and my hard work that I was, you know, doing so well and getting the right answers, and sometimes I could even answer the questions before the questions were asked. And I just also, like you, didn't know I was using that sixth sense. But what made you take the class that showed you that you were really clairvoyant?
Right. So, well, you know, when I was in the investment business, my boss used to say, you know, you have really good instincts. And I thought, yeah, I guess I have good instincts. You know, I guess I have good intuition. So I was always interested. You know, I always thought, you know, maybe it would be fun to take a class sometime to tune up my intuition. It would be fun to learn a few tools. And that's all I was thinking. It just seemed like it would be sort of an interesting low-key exercise. So that's what I did. You know, obviously, I did, you know, it took me many years to do that, so it wasn't at the forefront, you know, of my to-do list, but I thought it would be something fun to do on a weekend. So that's what I did. I signed up for a weekend class in New York, Intuition Development, and I came up from Baltimore. I live in Baltimore, and there were about 25 people in the class, none of whom I knew. We did a few exercises Saturday morning, and they were very low-key, and I was getting everything. I didn't think too much about it. And then we took a break, and when we came back from the break, the teacher said, now we're going to do a seance. And that was really not what anything I came for. I was not interested in participating in a seance, but I thought, well, you know, it's a weekend class, and it was still just Saturday morning, and nothing's going to happen anyway, so I'll just do it, and then we go on to the next exercise. So the teacher put us in a meditative state and then said she would, you know, she would later take us out of that meditation, and if we saw anything, to let her know. So I thought, well, that's fine, but that doesn't pertain to me because I'm not going to see anything. So I meditated and then, you know, came out of the meditation, and the teacher said, does anyone see anything? So I looked around the room, and everyone was looking at each other, and I raised my hand. And she said, yes, Deborah, what do you see? And I said, I see about 50 people. So that's what happened to me. I had this very profound, spiritually transformative experience that I was absolutely not at all anticipating nor looking for.
You know, seance can also be called an unfoldment group, an afterlife group, a deep meditation where you rise up, you raise your vibration, and I am a medium also. So in that state, you can connect with the souls of departed loved ones or teachers or guides or angels. And only 4% of mediums see it the way you saw it. You actually saw the people or the energies, right?
I did. It's interesting you asked that because I was on a program a few days ago, and they asked me, did I just see, like, lights?
Right.
Or did
sometimes
I actually see people? And I said, no, I saw people. Everybody, I saw them just as, like, you know, yeah, just like you see people walking down the street. I saw everyone, and everyone looked just like them.
Well, you see, when I meditate and when I get information, I'm drawn to energies. And I in my inner eye and in meditation, see and hear and feel and smell things, all the different senses. But your gift is quite profound because, as I say, only 4% of mediums see it that way. So let's go on. Please tell us what a near-death experience or NDF is. And have you ever had one?
I have not had an NDE, but the experience that I had at the class was an STE, a spiritually transformative experience, and NDEs, or near-death experiences, or subsets of STEs. So NDEs, you know, were originally defined by Raymond Moody in 1975 when he wrote his book Life After Life, and he identified 8 elements of an NDE, you know, things such as seeing a white light, going through a tunnel, having a life review. 8 years later, Dr. Bruce Grayson at the University of Virginia added on another 8 elements of the NDE for a total of 16 elements. Now, the scientific community looks at these experiences very, you know, they're statistically oriented, and they have people check off the boxes to see how many elements of the NDE they experience. So that's how they look at it. But the way I look at it, and the way IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Experiencers, and ASSIST, the Association of Spiritually Transformative Experiencers, looks at it, is if you came back from this event transformed, unable to go back to the way you used to be, you've had the experience. So
absolutely.
And in fact,
let me give our listeners an idea of a spiritually transformative experience, which I had in 1993. It could might have even been a near-death experience. I'm not sure because I was very sick. I never thought of it as that, but I was sick with the flu and I was trying to sleep, and suddenly I felt my grandfather near my right side, but I couldn't exactly see him, but I knew it was him. I couldn't quite hear him, but I knew what he was saying, that I had to write something for my father. And I awoke, and I wasn't sure what had transpired. It didn't feel like a dream. And the next afternoon, I received a call from my mother, who told me that my dad had died. So I wrote his eulogy, in which I expressed the complex nature of life and spirit, although I had not been taught by my family of the possibilities of an afterlife. And I have spent the last 23 years in exploration of the truth about the force of life and death, and have in the process become a spiritual healer and medium. Now, I took my first Reiki class not far from where you took your class, near Penn Station, at the Association for Research and Enlightenment. But it sounds like we're drawn to it or called to it. And I think many people have the opportunity to advance themselves and learn about these things, but out of fear, sometimes they just let it go.
Now, I believe that, spirit nudges us or pushes us or, allows us all to proceed at our own rate. And, if you're meant to be doing these things, you'll do them. And if you're not ready, you're not going to be doing them. I mean, I read for a lot of people. I'm sure you do, too. A lot of people are having breakthroughs now and coming to me and telling me about these unusual experiences.
Yes.
And, it just seems as if everyone proceeds along the path pretty much as they're supposed to. You know, when they're ready for more, more is handed to them. If they're not quite ready, they don't get, they're not getting everything sometimes. So, I mean, it's anecdotal, so I can't tell you with 100% certainty that that's the way it is.
Yeah, we do have free will, and we have a choice to live our life. Spirit loves us, and however we progress, eventually everybody will arrive at an understanding that consciousness survives physical death, and we're very much more than our body. Some people earlier in the life, some people maybe not even in this lifetime, but beyond this lifetime. But it's okay. You're right, as you say. However we progress is exactly right for us. So you go on to tell the story of Javier, who was transported to another realm where he encountered a really high frequency of energy. So tell us something about him.
I interviewed, I spoke to more than 50 people, a universe of more than 50 people when I wrote the book, and then I included about a dozen of the more interesting cases in the book. Since the book's come out, I've talked to hundreds of people, of course, but that particular story of Javier Pereza is an interesting one. Javier was not really a very nice guy. He's Hispanic. He's the lightest skinned person in his family, and in the Hispanic household, if you're the lightest skinned, you're the favorite. So that meant that when Javier wanted to eat, everyone in his family ate, and when he wanted to go on vacation, they all went on vacation. And he was also his grandmother's favorite. One night, Javier went to bed, and he had a number of, very unpleasant things happened to him, one of which was he felt like he was being pricked by 1,000 very sharp needles. He saw ghoulish faces. He did go through a tunnel. He had, a very frightening experience. And he woke up crying, and the next day he couldn't get out of bed. That following evening, and I should mention one other thing, just as an example of the kind of guy he was, his cousin had called him, a few weeks before that and said she needed to borrow some money. Could she borrow $2,000 from him? And he said, I'm going to Las Vegas this weekend. No, So he went to Las Vegas, and at the end of the weekend, he realized he had lost $2,000, and it crossed his mind, oh, that was the amount of money his cousin wanted. Oh, well. So, he really was pretty narcissistic. So he had this, terrifying and profound experience in his sleep. And the next evening, the phone rang, and he and Javier said, and there it is. He knew what the call was about. And he picked up the phone, and it was his cousin, and his cousin said, I have some bad news for you. And Javier said, I already know. And she said, well, how do you know? Did your brothers tell you? Grandma died last night. And he said, no, she said goodbye to me. This was something that had also happened during this experience he had.
You think as she was traveling through the astral plane, he felt some of the lower vibrations of that place before she was trying to communicate with him then? Why did he have that negativity and then find out that his grandmother, who loved him so much, let him absorb some of that beautiful energy from spirit? How did the two happen together?
We actually don't have a clue as to why some people have distressing NDEs. About 2% of NDEs, or, you know, these experiences are distressing, and we don't have a clue why they are. You know, it doesn't seem to be particularly related to the kind of person you are or any other circumstances. But, you know, some people have them. That's all I could say.
Oh, you know, yes, you're right. You know, I interviewed Dr. Evan Alexander, who wrote Proof of Heaven, and he was a neurosurgeon, and he was in a coma for about a week.
Right, he had the bacterial meningitis.
Right,
and,
meningitis.
Right.
And he said he was in that darker or uncomfortable place at the beginning. So maybe there is, for some people, an area that they have to go through before they can lift up into the higher realms or energy forces. So, yeah, that's what it must have been.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back
right.
to this. Do you have to clinically die to experience an NDE? And how many people, approximately, how many people have them?
Well, no, you do not need to clinically die to have an NDE. You know, that's a little bit of a misnomer because, you know, I know when I was doing research for the book and I would tell people I was working on these cases, the first thing they would always ask is, how long was that person dead for? You know, that was just really fascinating mm-hmm. to them. And I would have to say, actually, that they weren't clinically dead. So, you know, it's true that many NDEs are the result of trauma, a heart attack, a drowning, you know, or a car accident, but you don't have to clinically die to have an NDE.
Yeah, they're just out of their bodies for a little while. Right. They're not 30 minutes, and then they wake up like Danny and Brinkley. You know the story of Danny and Brinkley?
Right.
He was dead
right.
quite
uh-huh.
a while. He was hit by lightning while talking on the telephone. I met him years
right.
ago, and he had a very serious near-death experience and was very transformed. But you're right, it doesn't have to be dead. And millions of people have these experiences, but you don't hear about a lot of them because many people are not really able to absorb everything that happened. So perhaps, you know, it takes a long time for them to work into the way they want to live as a result of what they've experienced, right?
They say in the U.S. alone, there are 15 million people who claim to have had an NDE, and I think the number is actually probably higher than that because many people have these experiences, and they don't even know what they had. They're not familiar with the term, or they just don't know exactly what happened to them. So, we don't know for certain, but we know that they're much more common than you would think. So, in fact, you know, these spiritual experiences are much more common than you think. It's just that people don't talk about them because they don't want anyone to think they're crazy. They don't want to be ridiculed. So, you know, they keep it to themselves. Right. They say there's a period of about 7 years of adjustment, you know, after you have one of these experiences. So, you know, it takes people a while to integrate them and to, you know, as their life shifts, they have to get used to, you know, the new way of life. I could tell you, I didn't tell anyone about my experience. You know, I didn't leave the classroom in New York thinking, geez, I can't wait to share this with everybody. Wasn't this great? I didn't tell anybody. So, because,
well,
you know,
I
most
did.
Of the people I knew were, yeah. I was in the investment business, and, you know, nobody in
yes.
the investment business would have thought I was crazy. And I wasn't really sure what happened. So
right.
it took quite a long time, and, you know, I included my story in the book because it's, you know, part of this larger story. But
it actually did take me 6 years after that dream with my grandfather for
mm-hmm.
me to start to become aware of where I was being guided and led and the synchronicity and coincidences, and then teachers started to come in, and then I was at a seance group, and things started to progress, but it took a while. You're right. It has to be absorbed, and a person has to make a consistent commitment to want to go ahead and develop this part of themselves. But let's go
mm-hmm.
on to what are, this is important, what are some types of NDE after effects, and can you give us some examples of people who exhibited these changes?
Sure, of course, Cheryl. So, you know, the reason I decided to pursue this research and then end up writing the book was I was asked to read for a pretty well-known NDEer, who, in fact, was struck by lightning. It wasn't Damien Brinkley, but it was a well-known person who was struck by lightning and then came back with these unusual abilities afterwards. And I did this reading for him, and I was in Washington, D.C., and then I came back to Baltimore that night, and I started thinking, you know, what happened to him? Why does he have these abilities? And what's he supposed to do with them? And what about other NDEers? What do they get? And why are they getting them? So I Googled NDE After Effects, and I found out there hadn't been any research done. So I decided, well, I guess I'll have to do the research. Now, it's not that far-fetched because, remember, I used to be in the investment business, and for many years I was a healthcare research analyst, so I knew how to do, you know, this type of research. So that's how I started out, and I wanted only to focus on people who had these physiologic and cognitive after effects because they're irrefutable, you know. Somebody comes back with newfound musical or mathematical ability, like there's someone in the book who gets quantum physics downloads, and she has 32 bins of these downloads in her closet at home, and she's a former hairdresser, so she's not at all prepared for this. You know, something like that is irrefutable. Or if you come back as an artist, or your IQ, which was tested before and after the experience, is, you know, considerably higher. I mean, these are all things that are medically documented. So I was interested in that because many people come back from these experiences and say, you know, I'm more spiritual. Well, I can't prove that. I don't know how spiritual you were before, and I can't measure how spiritual you are now. So, I mean, I believe them, but, you know, for purposes of doing a study, you can't measure it. So I focused on those after effects that you can measure. So not everybody gets, you know, these after effects. Not everybody gets the same after effects. But they do include things like musical ability, newfound artistic ability, mathematical ability, enhanced vision and hearing, electrical sensitivity. You don't have to be an NDEer to be electrically sensitive. Many people are electrically sensitive. Spontaneous healing, and, like Eben Alexander.
Yes, and Deborah, also many people come back from this with a new concept of mission and how they want to help themselves and others live their life. So that it's a profound experience for many, many people, myself included. And you obviously opened up to the possibilities of how we could use this effectively to help our world communities, people, and our world communities, and ourselves. So why do you think some people may be selected for an NDE? And it's a good possibility that certain things in our background or family may have allowed this or encouraged this to happen. So tell us something about that.
Right, that's right, Cheryl. Well, you know, when I was doing the research, you know, there were certain themes and trends that kept surfacing. And one was that many of these people who'd had an NDE had abusive childhoods. You know, I started to see the pattern over and over again with these folks. Many of them came from lives that were referenced by darkness. They always felt out of step. They always felt like they were different. Some of them outright asked for the experience, and others of them appeared almost to be in training prior to the experience. So maybe they had changed their diet. Maybe they were becoming vegetarian. Maybe they were practicing yoga. Maybe they were already becoming more spiritual. But, you know, clearly intention has something to do with this. And in terms of, you know, the type of individual, these people whose lives are referenced by darkness, it appears almost as if, you know, the universe looks at folks and says, you know, certain people may be candidates for this. And the ones whose lives are referenced by darkness might be especially malleable for a transformative experience.
And they,
you know,
they also might be very compassionate and empathetic. So they may have a gift already to tune into other people and to help them discover what they need. And so it's not only from dark, I didn't come from a dark background like that, but I came from an intelligent background, a caring background, a loving background, but not a particularly spiritual background. But I had always a great compassion and feeling for everybody, and I can sense their emotions. And so I would think it's either or. It could be the darkness, or it could be a great love for life and people that would make a person go in this direction. I really think that's so. So what do you want readers to take away from this book?
I think the bottom line is that we are energy, and that energy continues to exist long after our physical body dies. So, you know, in the Western culture, folks believe that death is the end, you know, it's just a big black screen. we live on a physically dense earth, and we are physically dense in our bodies. But, you know, when we die, our physical body does die, but that energy, our essence, the battery that powers us, that continues to live. And I think that's the conclusion from the work that I did and from all these cases that I studied for this book, that our essence is eternal.
That is absolutely true. I have discovered that, but I didn't always believe that. Did you always believe that?
I can't tell you that I did a whole lot of thinking about it. To be honest, you know, I came out of a different background.
Right, but I was not trained to believe in that. So for me, there was I had to give up a lot of old beliefs and training, childhood patterns, to accept the reality and the truth, because this is the truth. Consciousness does survive physical death. I am an intuitive medium. I give people messages. They cry. There is information I could not know. There are words or songs or smells, and the minute I say them, they don't mean anything to me, but they mean something profoundly loving to the person getting them. It's coming from somewhere, obviously, and I choose to believe that consciousness survives physical death, and we are very much more than our bodies, but I didn't always believe that, and that's what I was asking you. Did you believe that before all these things happened?
I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know the answer to that. But clearly, after doing this research, and like you, you know, I'm a psychic medium, and I connect with folks who've passed on. You know, mm-hmm. It clearly influences how you think and what you believe.
Right. And it's a beautiful gift, because I know when I'm in that zone and in that quiet feeling of peacefulness and love, when I come out of it, I'm so still and I'm so comforted, and it's a beautiful gift to share with others, and I'm very grateful that I have been able to go past my original childhood training and background to know something profoundly important and worth sharing with everybody. I want to thank you, Deborah Diamond, for the innovative and creative approach to exploring the meaning, value, and gift of near-death experiences in ways that help readers see the event in a very open-ended and practical view. For more information and to purchase this book, Life After Near Death, please go to DeborahDiamondAuthor.com. In summarizing today's interesting show on Healing From Within, we have discussed life after near-death experiences, and in the process have actually come to know our state of being as energy beings having a physical life, and discovering once again that consciousness survives physical death. Energy life just transforms and transcends multidimensional realms of life and reality and can never be destroyed. We have discovered that some people may have a predisposition to having an NDE, as their emotional and spiritual sensitivities might make them good candidates to become healers and visionaries that might help them change and improve their lives and the lives of others. We have talked about the white light that some people experience during a near-death experience, and they might see, and Deborah described it and wrote. When experiencers see the white light, they might have different names for it, but many encountered it as they entered this other realm. It was their essence they took with them as they left their physical body behind. Some call it God, others recognize it as their soul families. Most describe it as all-encompassing love, or the universal all. It's there to greet us. It is what remains, the good, the true and pure, after we leave behind our earth bodies. Deborah and I would hope you begin to remember the beauty of your own life force and develop your great spiritual gifts while here on earth. Even if you do not have a near-death experience, you may begin to go within to listen to your intuition, which is for all of us. We all have this gift. Allow that to enhance your physical life and your needs and experiences. It is in utilizing the best of both worlds, the seen and the unseen, that we may achieve peace, health, and well-being. Pay attention, and you will see the possibilities for your own growth. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I welcome you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, where you may learn more about your life, the world and universe, as you view it with new eyes and hear it with new insights, leading to an expanded view of consciousness and eternal life. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.